Only this morning I realized I should have changed the title of my reflection from spiritual maturity to spiritual maturing. It's more hopeful. Each of our spiritual journeys are individual and unique. We walk our own paths, and some of the time we walk beside others, and then we call that community. Sometimes we are alone on the mountain or on the way up the mountain or in the middle of the river or in our bedrooms late at night. Our understanding of ourselves and the world we live in and how we understand our meaning and purpose in life changes through the life experiences that we have, if we let it. And from these experiences and how we understand them and are transformed by them, so we mature. James Fowler published a book in 1981 called Stages of Faith. Maybe you know it. I will be referring to it quite a bit through this talk. It arises from the mapping of human development stages by Piaget and Colbert. Fowler creates a theory of six stages that people go through as their faith matures. The stages can be applied not only to traditional faiths like Christianity and Judaism, Buddhism, Islam, but also to paganism and Wiccan and earth-based spiritualities, as well as secular worldviews. So, let's go into them a little bit. Stages, pre-one and one, if we can have the next slide. So the pre-stage is infancy. It's when we're babies and we are 100% dependent on somebody else for our safety, for our nourishment, our warmth, our care. And it's from that time of dependency that we learn about trust and love when we are having our needs met. And the foundation of spiritual growth begins with trust. In our tradition, we have a ceremony called the naming ceremony or an infant dedication ceremony. And that's when the child, the baby, is brought into the community and we recognize it as an individual by its name. But we also, my favorite, reading prayer, is at the end of that ceremony, the officiant speaks to everybody here gathered, the community, and says it is your responsibility to care for this being and raise them to be their fullest selves. In stage one, that's toddler and preschooler. This is when our stories are believed literally and true. Fantasy and reality get mixed up together. Our foundational stories of reality, of God, are picked up from our families, our society, our parents. For example, I think of my mother, who grew up, her father was a Presbyterian minister, and she tells how at the dinner table every single night he would read from the Bible. And even when she was in her 90s, there was a part of her that still knew for certain that Jesus loves me, this I know, because the Bible tells me so. And that was seeded into her in that early stage. I would say Ozzy fits into this category as being both fantasy and reality. To the children, Ozzy is real. And what Ozzy says has profound impact. I source, going back 50 years, which ages me in front of you, I know, as a shock, but, you know, the importance of Mr. Rogers, or in Canada, it was the friendly giant with the sidekicks of Jerome and Rusty that communicated to our preschoolers or early school children the importance of how to treat each other and what was true and real. The next slide, stages 2 and 3. Stage 2, the mythic literal. School-age children, when early school-age children, is when they have a sense, the beginning sense of what is fair. What is fair and unfair? The beginnings of understanding justice and equality begin to bloom. And if there is a god or a deity that's introduced, depending on the culture you come from or your family, then that deity or god reflects our human qualities. I think of Superman as an example of this. In the secular society, Superman is that mythic super person, human being that we can relate to, that has extraordinary powers but uses them for justice, cares for his family and his community. This is also a period when we have creation stories, and they are taken very literal. If you came in the Christian story, the creation stories of Adam and Eve, there are still people who may be in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 20s, but they still believe that those creation stories are real, right? It just means that they've stayed in their maturing at that particular stage. Stage 3 is the synthetic conventional. This is when we're into adolescence, and we begin questioning values and belief systems in order to find our own identity. So, for example, many Unitarians of a certain generation were generally speaking about that 13-year-old who was in a traditional, perhaps Christian church and started to ask a lot of questions that made the community around them very uncomfortable, and they got shut down. And so they made a decision at a very young age that this did not work for them. This was not just or fair. And so at some level, they left that particular group. Or alternatively, you have a 13-year-old that embraces or is embraced by a spiritual community when their personal values are reflected. An example, in our tradition, we have our coming-of-age program for 13, 14-year-olds, that we support them finding out for themselves their own principles, their own values, what is important to them. We encourage that individual search. And hopefully then they take that through their entire lives. Stages 4 and 5. Stage 4 takes us into the late teenager, early adult stage of individuative and reflective period. So Fowler, who created this, he says it's a period that is concerned with boundaries, where I stop and you begin, where the group that I can belong to with conviction and authenticity ends and other groups begin. It's very much concerned about authenticity and a fit between the self and the group. The person may say to themselves, I feel myself to be in a group and the ideological commitments that I'm attached to. In Unitarian circles, we are asked to identify with these values and principles and walk our talk. Young adults in particular, when they're out looking and searching for what has meaning to them, sometimes this is called a gap year or, you know, traveling off. My daughter at 18 went off to Cambodia by herself. I myself went church shopping, tried out all kinds of different churches and synagogues and temples, looking for a community that reflected my own beliefs and values. When I was in my early 20s, I'd been on a spiritual quest for quite a long time, and I arrived at the University of Regina because I was interested in transpersonal psychology, and it was the only place in Canada where I could study it. And I was sitting in the university library and pulling together all my ideas, and I put them down on a piece of paper, and I was proud of myself. I thought, here, I have created a new religion. This is what I believe. I was really proud of myself and quite disappointed, and it was a moment of education when I realized that this actually was Taoism that I had created, which had been around for about 3,000 or 4,000 years. So in the middle adult stage, this is called conjunctive faith, an integration of others' values into a single definition of truth. Fowler says of stage five, it's a time when a person is also ready to look deeply into the social unconsciousness, those myths and taboos and standards that we look in with our mother's milk and that powerfully shape our behavior and responses. We really do examine those, which means we're ready for a new kind of intimacy with persons and groups that are different from ourselves. We are ready for allegiances beyond our tribal gods and our taboos, our tribal taboos. Stage five is a period when one is alive to paradox, understanding that truth has many dimensions, which have to be held together in a paradoxical tension. So I know this as the story of walking up the mountain, and there's all these dozens and dozens of paths that go up the mountain, meaning each tradition, each belief system or religion is walking its path, but we're all on the same mountain. We're all headed in the same ultimate direction of understanding. It's when conflictual ideas shift and we no longer experience the cancellation of one idea for the sake of the other. In Unitarian theology, we have the concept of the unity in diversity. Where is the wholeness in all the diversity that we have? We're also holding it, if you look at our sources, if we embrace all those sources and not just pick and choose the ones that we think are right, if we can embrace all six sources, we're getting close to this stage of being able to live in the paradox or live in the tension of all that diversity. And this is a challenging place for us, as it is for anyone. The challenge is to be confident and rooted in what's true for you, so much that you don't have to convince anybody, nor do you have to feel threatened by anyone with differing thoughts and belief systems. Then we move on to stage six. This is called universalizing faith. It's later adulthood. And from what I read, this is very rare that we get to this stage. Very rare. Fowler says some few people will ever move into stage six. In a sense, he says, we can describe this stage as one in which persons begin radically to live as though what Christians and Jews call the kingdom of God. We're already a fact. He says, I don't want to confine it to Christian and Jewish images of the kingdom. It's much more than that. I'm saying, he says, these people experience a shift from the self as the center of experience, and now their center becomes participation in that ultimate reality. There's a reversal of figure and ground. And we experience these people on the one hand as being more lucid and simple than we are, and on the other hand as intensely liberating people, sometimes even subversive in their liberating qualities. He suggests Martin Luther King in his later life, or Thomas Merton. I think of the Canadian Jean Vanier, who was founder of the L'Arche communities. These are persons, he says, says Fowler, who in a sense have negated the self for the sake of affirming that ultimate reality, or affirming something bigger than they are, some quality or principle that transcends the individual personality. And these people are rarely famous. They are more likely that they're almost invisible in society because they live simple lives, not ego-driven lives. I think of a, if we could think of an example in our tradition, I go to the sixth principle, and every once in a while I have a feeling of what it would be like if I truly lived that interdependent web of all existence. If I knew that truth in my cells and lived from that place, I think that's what he's talking about. So then we move on just to say that these stages, they're not linear. We go back and forth and in and out. Some might say they're spiraling. And it's also that if you did not experience one of these stages, it's not that you can't go back and recreate or relearn that stage. For example, if you didn't learn trust, if you grew up in an environment as an infant that was not safe, where you were not loved and cared for, and you didn't learn trust, as an adult, you can teach yourself how to do that. You can teach yourself how to trust again. Another example is moving back and forth. It's like making bread, you know, the kneading of the bread, and you keep adding new ingredients, right? A little bit more salt, a little bit more sweet, more fiber, more flavor. You have that within your capability to create the perfect bread for you. And next. Then there are spiritual awakenings that sort of pop in at any stage. The Buddha is the perfect example that probably we all know. Young man in his early 20s sat under the Bodhi tree to try to understand the meaning of suffering. And he experienced spiritual awakening. Others have great insights into the meaning of life when they're facing death, or if they're walking with someone who is facing death. It's almost like a portal to the possibility of enlightenment, insight. And I invite you to remember a moment in your lives of insight or peak experience where suddenly you had a deeper understanding of life, of death, of meaning. Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote, "A person will worship something, have no doubt about that. That which dominates our imaginations and our thoughts will determine our lives. Therefore, it behooves us to be careful." So in our being careful of what we put our faith into or what we give worth to, we need to do this with thoughtfulness. And this is not, spiritual maturing is not about a particular belief system. Fowler suggests we look at four questions. What are you spending and being spent for? What commands and receives your best time, your best energy? What power or powers do you rely on and trust? To what or whom are you committed in life? big questions. And if you have the answers, you're amazing. I'm working on it still. We have groups in our community here. One's called Soul Matters, another Building Your Own Theology, whose purpose is to ask these kinds of questions, to explore what those answers are, knowing that how you answered it when you were 20, how you answered it when you were 50, or how you will answer it when you're 70, 80, or 90 will change. We evolve. The stages have been unfolding throughout history, and we aren't stopping. As Fowler says, it doesn't take a huge leap of logic to predict that future stages of faith will emerge. He reminds us that there was a period in human history a few thousand years ago when it only required one or two major psychological transformations to become an adult in the eyes of society, while today we expect there to be between 3 and 6. And apparently there's a whole lot more. I'm just throwing up Ken Wilber because he's the more in our current world. I don't know if you know Ken Wilber. He created a philosophical system that synthesizes all human knowledge and experience. And he adds, I think, about 11 stages of human consciousness that he's mapped. And he gives great respect to the work, the foundational work of Fowler. One of these days, I will be brave enough to do a service on the work of Ken Wilber, which I just barely understand. So what is important to us today? As Unitarians, it is important to us today to ask these questions, to contemplate and reflect on these questions, because we say we are lifelong learners. And yet, I do fear that some of us are stuck in a stage of our maturing that doesn't serve us anymore. And so I ask each of us, do we, for example, just talk or do we walk our talk? Can we hold two opposing views, belief systems, and live comfortably in that tension? Can we meet others exactly where they are and fully accept them, respect them, and love them? These are our challenges. This is our work. I believe that we're entering a time of great upheaval in society. Almost like a duh question right now. And I would also say that it's simultaneously an opportunity for great human transformation. A time when liberal religious people are being challenged to defend the covenants that we made. When we're being asked to live out our principles and values in a world that will not necessarily make it easy for us. What our ancestors fought for and put their lives on the line for, what we have reaped and nourished ourselves on, can no longer be taken for granted. Today we need to know what we stand on. We need to know what we are spending and being spent for. What is of worth to us, what commands and receives our best energy, our best self, our best time? What powers do you rely on and trust? To what or to whom are you committed to right now? By your presence here, I think you're saying that this is important to you. And that from wherever we stand in our maturing, we are here together knowing and sensing that community may be part of the answer. Now, to be honest with you, I don't know where I fall in these maturing stages. Because some days I feel like that infant who's still trying to learn what love and trust and hope is. And then there are days when I feel that almost mystical experience of the unity of all living beings. So on this day of Thanksgiving, I am grateful for all of this knowing and all of the unknowing and the learning and the maturing in life. I'm grateful to be alive with you and for each of us who imagines the next step and who has the courage or even just the desire to take it. I am grateful for the beauty of this earth, for the bounty of her creation, and for her patience with the humans that walk on her. Let us sing together one of my favorite songs, "When Our Heart Is in a Holy Place." And as we are Unitarians and we scan the line